cancer research priorities need to be changed urgently, delegates to the ECHO-ESMO Congress heard in the European Partnership for Action Against Cancer session. Even though doctors may themselves know how to prevent cancer and how to translate science into clinical improvements, they can't expect governments or the public to buy in to new policies automatically. So said Richard Sullivan, and he also said he wanted to see a global fund for cancer and a willingness to look beyond national boundaries. I asked him first what he thought cancer doctors need to do to improve research priorities.
Prioritisation is an essential process that we all do pretty much all the time in one way or another. And both for cancer research and service delivery, prioritisation is essential to know what amount of investment to put in at what time in what way. And really the average sort of medical oncologist, clinical oncologist, anybody really working in cancer research or service delivery can be involved in a variety of ways, mainly through their professional bodies and getting their professional bodies that they belong to work with them to develop priorities in a particular area they're keen on.
But why should a cancer doctor take an interest in changing priorities when he or she has a patient to treat?
The most important reason is the passion for a particular area. It's, you know, what the patient they're treating is the product, in a sense, of many years of research and service delivery. And if one feels, you know, passionate about what you're doing in your job, then actually defining what the next priority areas is for patients of the future should be something that really galvanizes people.
Now, what in particular, for example, are you not happy with about priorities as they are at present?
Well, we've done a lot of research looking at the gaps in the research areas, and two clear areas come out. One is prevention, where there is very low activity and very low investment, and the other is in interventional devices and technology development within the surgical area. So this is academic cancer surgery, and both those areas are weak at the moment.
To put it bluntly, there's a living to be made out of new cancer treatments like drugs, and there's less of a living to be made out of helping people not to get ill. Can you really do anything about that?
Well, I think absolutely. We need to be, I mean, personally on the prevention side of things, I think it's a very hard area to work in. It takes many years for the research to see the fruits of labour. It can be an area where it's very challenging of turning risk, knowledge of risk, into changes in human behaviour. And probably within that area, what we need to be doing is a lot more transdisciplinary work. So looking at, you know, the evolutionary psychological reasons for why people behave certain way or not, looking at cultural transmission theories for why bad anti-health behaviours are passed down from generation to generation. On the surgical side, it's a matter of investment, but also changing the culture of surgery to re-embrace research. And so this becomes an integral part of an individual's training throughout their life and isn't just seen as a sort of nice add-on for surgeons later on. I think there needs to be both a cultural change and more investment in the surgery area.
Now, in the case of prevention, do doctors have to take more of an interest in what their governments and what their hospitals and their research centres are doing?
I think it's absolutely essential that the clinicians take more of an interest in the prevention area. I think it's often seen as sort of very high government policy, but really prevention in a sense starts at the local area in the hospital. What sort of messages are being given out in the clinics? What sort of messages are being delivered within the cancer networks? And actually, you know, your average practicing clinician has a lot of power over this. They're the individuals that see patients day in, day out, who also get to interact with their families. And so the ability to push across the prevention messages and also to put in place new mechanisms for supporting patients who've had cancer to prevent a recurrence, for instance, exercise, etc., are there for them to be pushing forward at their individual level.
And when it comes to surgical technology, is it just a matter of funding? Because surgeons do want their technology to improve and are already trying to do the best they can.
There's no doubt within the development of surgery as an art, this occurs over the years as new procedures are worked up. The issue really around making sure that surgery really is at the forefront of cancer research is first of all making sure that surgeons are sort of literate in the molecular biology and the drug development so they can interact with their colleagues, but secondly also to develop much quicker, more advanced technologies through multidisciplinary and transdisciplinary networks. So it is about investment, but it's also about changing the culture of surgery to encompass research as an integral part of the whole career.
Now, on the question of research, I think one of the ideas you've been getting over here in Berlin is that some research is inward-looking and doesn't spread out and branch to other types of research. What are your thoughts on that?
We've looked a lot about how research is creative and whether or not innovation is increasing or decreasing. We've noticed in certain research areas the branching effect seems to be decreasing. And what's clearly needed is not just additional money, but more creative ideas and solutions for the research.
Why do you need to branch out and be outward looking rather than just get more and more expertise in one area? Yeah.
Cancer is a very complex disease across many different sites, and we've clearly in some areas made a great deal of progress, but in other areas, for instance metastatic disease, we've made glacial advances there. And really we're going to need very creative solutions to dealing with some of the major problems, and the only way we're going to do this is having these much larger transdisciplinary groups covering many different areas.
Can you give me an example of how creativity could help, and what kind of creativity? Have there been any examples?
There have been many examples of really creative cancer research, transdisciplinary. But the one example perhaps people forget about, which is around us every day now, is of course what we call translational research. In 1980, translational research didn't exist. Clinicians and scientists worked in completely separate domains. But in 20 years, we now have clinicians and scientists working together on common problems, particularly around early phase drug development. We're also seeing inclusion of evolutionary principles now into describing cell kill through radiotherapy and also through use of chemotherapy. So this is using evolutionary models described first by Charles Darwin and later individuals to define how we should be treating patients.
If it's so clear, though, that there will be a payoff, can we not just leave it to the big corporations to follow their commercial leads?
The problem with just allowing just single corporations and industry to follow their commercial leads is that they're very focused in a very narrow area. And when you've got goal-directed research on the back of shareholders and generating money, what you do is you miss out an awful lot of very creative research that needs to take place for the next generation. So what you do need is a huge bedrock of public funding covering all these different creative areas. And public research and public-funded research is absolutely essential.
Now, there have been national directives in America, for example, to beat cancer, but it hasn't happened. Do you think there is scope for making really big progress against this disease if you harness this sort of creativity?
There's no doubt since the 1970s from NCI days that we thought that the war against cancer would be over very quickly. Cancer is an extraordinarily complex disease. It's only going to become under control and cure through these very creative networks and very creative solutions. And really, when you look at the future, a lot of the low-hanging fruit in terms of the early wins in childhood cancers, in adult cancers, has already probably been gained. The real progress we're going to make at, say, metastatic disease is going to come through from very creative research.
And coming back to prevention, where there is big scope, if only it can be done, are there powerful enough simple messages, and what are they that average doctors might be transmitting to the community?
The simplest message and the message that we always put over is what the risk factors are. But clearly within the communities, the doctors know in their individual communities what the spread of the community is, the ethnicity, the social economic spread. And it's about tailoring these messages in different ways and putting them over in different mediums to that community that's really going to get the traction and the benefit. And to a certain extent, it's about lobbying and keeping those prevention messages absolutely at the top of the agenda.
What sort of message should doctors be taking home from your talk here in Berlin then, do you think?
Doctors should be taking home sort of three messages from the talk in Berlin. First of all, political prioritisation of research areas and service delivery is something they ought to be involved in at every level. Secondly, that we need to be much more holistic about the research we're funding, and that we need further support within prevention and surgical technology. And thirdly, that creative cancer research is absolutely essential for the future, and having radical new ideas and pursuing them is the way forward.
Richard Sullivan from King's College London, talking with me at the joint European Society of Medical Oncology and European Cancer Conference in Berlin. For Oncology Times Broadcast News, I'm Peter Goodwin.